everybody. This is Armand DeMille.
And this is Roberta Maria Atti.
Bringing you The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. The Positive Mind, an interesting title as we go further and further. Is positive-mindedness a good thing? You know, we know enough people out there who are walking around in la-la land, right, who are positive about everything, and they're afraid of any emotions, and they are reluctant to experience anything that's painful. Is that a good thing? Is that a... Well, we're kind of investigating the positive mind. We want to understand it, Roberta Atti and I. And it does seem that according to nature, feeling good or having a positive feeling is the baseline.
Yes, it looks like evolution implies feeling good, because those organisms that not only survive but are happy about it, like to live, enjoy life, enjoy living, seem to do much better than those who live but do not enjoy living.
And that's quite a statement, even though it seems rather obvious. We're going to look into that very deeply today through a very interesting study that we discovered, which was a discovery about flowers and cut flowers. Flowers, plants, arrangements, just by one of our typical... Let's go check out flowers, things that we did. We got so involved in this.
Well, yes, both of us like flowers, and flowers are so beautiful. They evolved 140 million years ago, so they're a very recent event. They're
like,
not,
like
they're
yesterday.
They're not very old, like yesterday, a very short amount of time, if you think that... humans have been around, what, 4 or 5 million years? There's debates going on there, but it's not a long time, 140 million years. And with flowers, what we had was the evolution of beauty as a survival strategy that was very successful.
That beauty should have a survival... I mean, why do plants need flowers? Why do we need beauty? This is kind of important. What was important to it? How did humans relate to flowers? Well, and how do all insects?
Well, it seems that there is a certain level of stimulation of the senses that occur when we experience beauty that is life-enhancing. It's the colors, it's the symmetry of something, it's the design, the geometry, it's the...
Smell.
The smell, the harmony of a flower, all of its elements, the smell, the color, the symmetry, all of it evokes something in the heart of humans that is rather unique and beautiful.
And also, when we say life-enhancing, friends, some of us enjoy our lives, some of us don't. Sometimes we're elated, sometimes we're depressed. Yes, the obvious is true. Depression is death-enhancing. It means not alive, not living, and kind of waiting to die. That's the way the species kind of evolved, that those who are in bad moods go off suddenly and they don't procreate and they kind of weed themselves out, whereas those who have a positive mood and a positive attitude kind of generate and keep ourselves generating. In fact, let's look at these contagions, the facial expressions, just to give you an example.
Mm-hmm. Well, it turns out that facial expressions are contagious. And what that means is that when we look at someone, we read the clues that come across from the way their facial muscles are being used, that convey the underlying emotional state that individual is experiencing at the time. So if someone is feeling good, the muscles in their face convey that. And this is not something they do intentionally, and we're not necessarily aware that we're picking up this information, but we are, so that when we look at someone, they communicate to us how they're feeling through their facial expression. And this is what's remarkable. When we look at someone who is happy, we tend to mimic the facial expression of the person we're looking at, and vice versa.
Did you ever have that happen? I mean, you could be feeling glum, and you look at a child, and the child is giddy, and then all of a sudden you feel this kind of lift to your spirit.
That's right, because something goes on without even you being aware of it. You look at a child who is smiling, and you're sad. All of a sudden, you feel this uplifting feeling that Armand is describing. Something has happened to your limbic system. Your limbic system has determined that you are looking at a happy face. And so it mimics the facial expression of the child that you're looking at. That's why, Armand, I think that looking at art, you know, when you walk around in Italy and you go inside a church and you look at those beautiful Madonnas with those
angelic
beatific faces.
Faces,
that's why you come out of there feeling so good, because you look at those expressions and there's something there.
So it's contagious. If you walk out of your house and you're feeling gloomy, somebody looks at you who's passing you by, or if you do the normal defensive posture of being expressionless to a little gloomy, which is what some people do, that kind of becomes infectious. You know, it becomes a little contagious. The next person shows the same face and feels the same way. Now, you were saying earlier, Roberta, if you go to a store and you want to buy something.
Right. When I walk into a store and I have money to spend on something, first thing I do is I tune into the person, the people who are in the store who are selling. And depending on how I feel about that store, I decide to either buy there or go somewhere else. And now I'm realizing, after reading this article, that perhaps it has something to do with the facial expressions of the people who are in the store. And something else I wanted to tell you, Armand, there's a very interesting experiment that everyone can do. One day when you go out to work and you go in the subway or whatever you do, make a point of wearing a smile on your face. You know, not a big smile, just a gentle smile. And you'll see how people react to you, how amazing it is that a small element like that can make a huge world of difference in a person's day.
We're going to talk later about how different people adapt different expressions as kind of defensive postures as well. I mean, spiders and mushrooms and other things in life make themselves get by being considered disgusting and repelling. We're going to talk about all of that. We're going to talk about flowers, but first we have to talk about a smile. Because the question is it a Duchenne smile or is it a Pan Am smile?
That's right. That's the question.
That is the question. Mm-hmm. It's a question I've asked my whole life. Is that smile a Duchenne or a Pan Am? And, well, that's the way they distinguish them. Two kinds of smiles. Actually, there are three, but there are two that really count. The Duchenne smile is the natural smile. It is a natural smile, and you could always tell a Duchenne smile because a person who smiles that way is smiling from their essence. And they have crow's feet. They have these little turned-up parts of their eyes that show the smile. The smile is kind of real.
Well, so much for plastic surgery, huh?
Well, and Botox, which right. kind of, you know, removes that part
right.
of the smile.
Right.
But so the real smile is called the Duchenne smile. Now, we're going to talk about that because we're going to relate that to the study that we were observing, this really remarkable kind of thing. The Pan Am smile was named after hostesses on Pan Am Airlines. It was named after the smile that a Pan Am hostess, which is back in the days of Pan Am, would put on their faces to give you this kind of plastic smile that was a smile all the time. And it was a smile that was there, but it did not necessarily reflect happiness, but it made you think it was happy, and you did smile in response.
Mm.
Now, the difference between a Duchenne smile and a Pan Am smile, which I'm sure all of you have been curious about your entire life, is really a difference in a felt experience, and this brings us.
You know, Armand, the Duchenne smile, which is really the scientific name for it, that's a real smile. It's a smile that comes from the limbic system. It's a smile that comes with the unconscious behind it. It's not a fake smile, so that you're not smiling only with your lips, but with your eyes as well, and with your heart. You know, your whole being is behind it. That Duchenne smile is so expressive that we are designed to recognize it and to be able to differentiate it from an artificial smile, which sometimes can disguise indeed something, someone hostile to us. The fake smile is not always convincing. The Duchenne smile is always convincing.
Yeah, you know, did you know that it was the 19th century French anatomist whose name was Armand Duchenne de Boulogne, right?
Yep.
Of all things. He spelled his name A-R-M-A-N...
D-E?
No, not D-E. It was A-N-E or A-N-N.
Armand.
And anyway, he was like a really amazing neurologist who worked at, you know, using electrical stimulation to discover facial things. And he's considered
He was into it.
He was really, really into it. He's checking on the smile, you know? Like, is the Mona Lisa, does she have crow's feet or not?
No.
No crow's
she
feet.
She doesn't, but I believe that's because, you know, Mona Lisa really is a self portrait, and it was kind of a joke that was intended. Well, anyway, I think that's a different show.
Okay, a different program. Let's
talk
about
it. It's not a Duchenne smile. No, you know the way that they are now confirming this information is that they actually show videos to people, and then in between video frames, unbeknownst to the people who are looking at the videos, they flash images of a face that it's either smiling with the Duchenne smile or upset, conveying anger or fear, whatever. So the people who are watching the video don't know that they're seeing these images because they're too quick, they're too fast, you can't register them. And yet, at the end of the video, those who have been shown the smiling face are in a good mood, and those who have been shown the angry face are in a bad mood.
And the mood is testable. You see, here's the thing that we're going to talk about today, which I think is so fascinating, friends. And if you think that a discussion about flowers is boring, or if you protest, if you believe that by cutting flowers, you are in some way doing something violent in life, like many people feel that if you pull a carrot from the ground, you've committed an act of violence, which I can understand, and they feel that by cutting a flower, you've committed an act of violence and that you're propagating some negative thing. We found some fascinating stuff about that as well, about why cutting flowers is not a negative thing.
Yes, this
and
is actually...
That's our punchline. We're coming to that at the end.
Yes, but I just wanted to say that it's making me feel better about having flowers around, because I always have to have flowers, and I did have that thought in my head. Gee, you know,
if we had just let it alone and it could have just stood there by itself, well, if you had left the flowers alone, there would be no humans. And we'll talk about that.
Right.
Right? We're going to talk about that. Right. We evolved from cut flowers.
Right.
Well, more than 5,000 years ago, people have cultivated flowers, although there's no known reward for this costly behavior. In three different studies, these scientists showed that flowers are a positive emotion inducer. Now, this is not just based on people's report. Three different studies, okay? Study number one. They showed flowers to, or they gave flowers to how many women was it?
147 women were involved in that study.
They measured in the study the Duchenne response, meaning is there a genuine positive response to receiving a flower. Out of that 147 women, they not only had 100% positive reaction, 100%. We're not talking 99.9, 100%. But they reported that the mood, the elevated mood, lasted for 3 days.
That's remarkable.
That, I mean, that's, you know, now I'm really doubting science. And we have enough, here, and if you write to us, we'll send you the study. It's validated,
mm-hmm.
You know. Okay, study number two.
Right. Study number two, we have 122 men and women in elevators.
Separate elevators, not all in the same elevator, because I want to get out.
Right, no, separate elevators. This was a study where the researchers would go in an elevator with men and women, and they would offer either a pen or a flower. And again, both men and women reacted always, 100% across the board, in a positive way to the being offered the flower. Not everyone, this is what we did not say before, Armand, that of the 147 women who were offered the flowers, 100% responded with the Duchenne smile. But also, the researchers wanted to see if offering something else would elicit the same thing, like fruit or like a candle, like a gift. And it didn't. It didn't. And even in the elevator, when people were offered either a flower or a pen, when they were offered a flower, all of them, 100%, responded with a positive, honest response.
Now, in a third study, women, elderly participants, age 55 and older, were given flowers, and another couple of basic, we're just going to present the outline of it now and give you much more detail about it later. They found not only elevated moods, but they found increased memory. Now, this is really important because they had they improved episodic memories. They had an immediate and long-term effect on emotional reactions, mood, social behaviors. And there is very little research that in any discipline to explain these findings. Well, they did the work on it, okay? So we suggest that cultivated flowers are rewarding because they've evolved to rapidly induce a positive emotion in humans. Now, the question is why? And the question is, what's that all about? There is an evolutionary niche for emotional rewards, is what the theory was. And the following studies, the studies that we're going to go into detail, kind of indicate that depriving humans of non-emotional support is detrimental to human survival and fitness. So it's as important as depriving humans of any other resource. So what Roberta was saying before, depriving humans of beauty will hurt them physically and emotionally. That humans need this emotional thing, which is not just emotional, because it seems to be physical as well. So let's take a brief history. In cultures around the world, as far back in history as we could have any records, flowers provided emotional information among people. They found pollen in the graves of Neanderthals, suggesting that, you know, flowers had a place in the burial. Flowers are expected to convey sympathy, contrition, romance, sexual intent, or celebration. And they used to express religious feelings. Let's talk about the positive and negative of the emotional niche.
Well, it seems that in order to survive, organisms exploit emotions. What does that mean? Emotions are already ingrained in the nervous system, let's say, of human beings. Emotions, of course, can be joy, love, fear, anger, whatever. Now, if in order to survive, I can take advantage of someone's fear, well, maybe I can disguise myself as a monster And that way, when they see me, they're going to be afraid of me, and they're not likely to come over to me to try to kill me and, you know, and use my, take my money from me.
There are plants and animals both that do that. They engender fright, fear, and disgust. Both, and that'll both, you know, they make you withdraw from it.
So what we mean by an emotional niche is that there are emotional responses that are already pre-programmed in an organism, and they are there independently from other organisms' behaviors. But then another organism can figure out how to exploit the first organism's emotional responses to its advantage. That's what we mean by a niche.
So the negative response can be used, and you know enough people that walk around in such a negative way that they get their advantage. They keep people at a distance, and they consider that their advantage. Animals do that. Insects do that. Even mushrooms do that. You know,
I guess what Armand is describing is like a defensiveness that becomes offensive, so that if a person is so repulsive, I guess, to the look or to the nose or to the sight or in some way disgusting, that's their way of protecting themselves from intimacy.
Yeah, well, what do you think a skunk does?
Right.
You know, a skunk is kind of keeping away the predators by triggering something that makes you practically run from the smell of it.
Okay, so the skunk is exploiting a sensory niche, right? The sensory niche is that we are disgusted by a certain smell. Well, the skunk mimics that smell, which is the smell of something rotting, for instance, to get us away from it.
Sure. Doesn't need other defenses.
Right. So we're just explaining what that dynamic is.
Now, that's the negative. But the positive, see, the negative is once you have that negative effect, but if you lived in a world where everything stimulated that negative effect in you, you couldn't eat, you couldn't function in the world. You need the positive in you stimulated.
Right. Well, what we're saying is that if a form of life can determine what another form of life's positive response is to something, the first form of life can utilize that response to its advantage. And so if there is a positive response to beauty, then a beautiful organism can exploit that propensity, that appreciation, that good emotional response to beautiful things to its advantage. It can make itself beautiful in order to enhance its own survival odds.
You know, there are some, even species of orchids, that produce little nectar. They attract pollinators with perfumes. And then the orchid bee, gets this, collects perfumes, pheromones from the orchids, puts them in specialized pouches, and then they use the perfume to attract other bees. So it's like, you know, the orchid decided, I'll grow this perfume that the bee can use to attract other bees, and therefore I'll get pollinated that way.
Right. So there's a lot of this going on through evolution, meaning that there are a lot of animals and plants that will exploit other organisms' reactions to their advantage, either in a negative way or a positive way.
There are species of orchids that mimic female sex pheromones and attract males who mate with the flower. You know, a flower wants to get mated. So the flower puts out this female sex pheromone, it attracts the male, and then as soon as it gets mated, it produces an anti-aphrodisiac pheromone. I mean, that's kind of amazing. You know, think of science, think of nature. The thing puts out a good smell, right? Mm-hmm. And then as soon as it gets it, it puts out a bad smell. No more mates allowed.
Right.
You know, no more guys coming over to me. I don't need it anymore. I've had it. It's like wearing a wedding band. Well, it's like the idea of wearing a wedding band. Many other plants provide non-nutritional chemical compounds which insects can use for defense of sexual attraction. Now, the attraction to flowering plants is probably related to this need for human emotion, positive human emotion. Positive emotion makes people appear to be more attractive, even sexually attractive, right? A person with a smile is going to attract more people than a person without a smile, which is probably, Roberta, why many women are reluctant to smile on a subway, because they're afraid that it's going to be perceived as something and inviting sexual stuff. And arguably, it gets you more approached socially, and therefore it's kind of simple. Positive emotions result probably in more mating, you know?
Well, in the end, yes, positive emotions and everything that goes with that is an enhancement of survival odds. Therefore, yes, it has to do with mating and reproducing and successful continuation of the species.
That's an important point, because you may not necessarily want to propagate the species.
Right.
You may just want to get by. If you want to just get by this lifetime or this period in your life, you may have a negative head. And your negative head is meant to get you from here to there, and you're not thinking about future generations.
And I think that when we look at people who live in a urban setting or suburban setting, when you're looking at people who are living in an artificially designed environment, you are going to see people who have emotional responses that differ from what the natural response would be. And that makes sense because you're dealing with something other than a natural environment. What we're describing is how evolution has worked through the millions of years. And through the millions of years, a positive, beauty-related, good-feeling-related, good feeling about myself related response to life has shown an improvement in all biological functions like immune system function, digestion. Everything you can think of is made better and easier when I feel good, when I'm feeling happy, and when I have a positive outlook towards life.
Which has a lot to do with your environment as well. If your environment is unattractive because of sloppiness, because, you know, you just don't feel like picking up the wrappers because you have dirty dishes everywhere and you're living that way, your body can't respond. Your body can't wake you up. Your depression is kind of perpetuated. Now, this is all leading us to a very, very interesting discussion, which we're going to come up to very soon. When we go into detail about this flower study, because somehow we were given in nature, or this design of nature, the interaction between flowers and humans, has given us some keys into our human survival.
You know, Armand, this reminds me a lot of the studies that were done with humans and pets.
Yes.
You know, it's similar to that.
Yes, and at the end we're going to find out about how dogs and cats came around for the very same reason that flowers have evolved.
Right.
We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, after a tiny bit of music for you that's very special about the Duchenne smile versus the Pan Am smile, we're going to go into the study about flowers. It's going to knock your socks off. We'll be back with you in a couple of seconds, my friends.
Hi, I'm Danny Glover, and this is WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York.
TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and, of course, your comments, questions, and observations. That's TalkBack right here on WBAI New York.
When you're laughing,
play that entire thing at the end of our record here. That's Billie Holiday.
Mm-hmm. When you're smiling. Folks,
and when you're smiling. Mm-hmm. You know, if flowering plants, this is Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Atti, the Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM, if you've just tuned in. We're talking about human survival and we're talking about flowering plants. Now this, we have to prove, here's what we have to prove, and when we read something and we research something, we want to prove that a thing can directly affect an emotional physical state. And here's where this flower study became so fascinating.
Well, the hypothesis was flowers make people feel good because everybody seemed to respond that way. So the researchers went about to do real studies to see if they could prove it.
You know, the way that a real study is done is usually the null hypothesis. You know, I don't know if you know what that is. That's, you go out to prove that flowers don't make a difference.
Right.
And then if you find out that flowers do make a difference in 5% or more of the population, you say, aha. The null hypothesis is disproven, and therefore it's validation.
Right.
Well, this is a funny thing that they did here. Now, we're going to go back to this. At the beginning, we get a group of women, and we offer them one of three things: a fruit or sweets basket, food; a large multi-wicked candle, which, you know, a lot of people find very attractive. Which is, selected stimuli because it has so many traditions to it, its flames. And the third one was the flowers, okay, or bouquet of flowers. Now, it should be interesting to know that a bouquet of flowers is a bouquet. It's mixed flowers. We're going to talk about why mixed flowers are preferred to a single flower like a dozen roses. The stimuli all had the same economic value. They all had the same pleasant odor. They had variation in color. They were wrapped similarly for presentation in clear plastic and powerful bows. And now here's what Roberta said. In the 5 seconds following the presentation of each stimuli, 100% of the participants in the flower group responded with a Duchenne smile, indicating happiness.
And only 23% of participants responded with a smile, with a Duchenne smile. No, I'm sorry, 23% did not respond.
It's 77%.
Right, did not. So 77% responded with the smile to the candle, and only 90% responded with a smile to the fruit. So,
and it's funny, the older you get, I'm sorry, Roberta, the older you get, the more they respond to the fruit.
Yeah,
but
right.
It's 100%, you know, fruit, 100% give me fruit, don't give me flowers.
100% with the flowers, 90% with the fruit, 77% with the candle.
Now, this is tremendously significant in research, in science. 90%. You may say, well, it's 90%. That's a lot. Well, that extra 10% makes a big difference.
Huge difference.
Huge difference. The Duchenne smile is common on the presentation of all stimuli as expected. It happens with flowers. Now, let's talk about the elevator study. You get in an elevator and you offer people either a pen or, that's one group. You go in an elevator and you give a pen to some people, and you study their response on three levels. Number one, the natural way that people stand in an elevator when there are two people in an elevator is one stands on one side of the elevator and the other stands on the other side of the elevator.
Right. There's a social distance that is maintained between two people who don't know each other, and that was not there after the person was given a flower.
Mind you, they're given the flower outside the elevator.
Right.
They're not given the flower by the person in the elevator because you may consider they're wacky and you got to stay away from them.
Right.
But you're given a flower getting into an elevator, and now here are the three criteria. How close you will get to the other person? Will you stand closer to somebody else in the elevator? Will you turn your head in the other direction? Normally, people in an elevator turn their head straight ahead. They don't look at the other person. And the third one was, is there any discussion that takes place?
Right.
And is there a Duchenne smile? Well, strangely enough, they gave the choice. The people who got the pen, they didn't change all that much. People who got the flowers changed enormously. They got a terrific increase in the head turn. In the proximity, people stood closer to the person in the elevator, and they had a smile that was carried with them. One single flower.
And so that says that the person who offers the flower is no longer considered a stranger. It's considered now a friend.
Well, wait, no. The person in the elevator is not the person who ordered the flower.
Right. What I meant was that it elicits the friendly a sense of friendliness and a sense of trust and a sense of no longer being strangers but familial.
To mankind, right. Not just
right.
to one person. It's
right.
like you feel it.
Also, it was interesting that some people who were not offered the flower, but they were there at the time of the study, but they saw that someone else was being offered a flower, they went over to the researchers and asked for
right.
a flower. Where's my flower? Why are you giving
pen.
Them a flower? I
Give
want
me
the flower.
A pen. The interesting thing also about it is, of course, now we're going to talk about men. How do men respond to receiving flowers? Well, you know, flowers, that's feminine. Who wants to receive flowers and who thinks that a man wants to receive flowers? Well, from the elevator study, we learned something tremendous. What percentage of the men do you think responded favorably to be given a flower as they're entering an elevator? What percentage do you think? Think about it, friends. You think 30% of the guys said, all right, I like it. 40%, and by positive response, we mean that Duchenne smile, plus the proximity once they got in the elevator, plus the head turning when they got in the elevator. What percent? Roberta?
100%.
100% of men love flowers, receiving flowers.
That's really nice to know.
Boy, is it ever. Because
yeah.
I was always feeling weird. I'm a flower guy.
Right.
You know,
you
I always have flowers around me. I like to work with flowers. I like ikebana. I thought I was unusual. But I'm not. Every man.
Well, you are unusual in the fact that maybe you are open about it and comfortable. I think some men may feel uncomfortable admitting that they like flowers.
Yeah, unless they found out that all the other guys liked flowers.
Which is why we're saying this.
You know? Everybody seems to like flowers and receiving
Everyone.
Flowers.
And it's not just that they like receiving it on the conscious level. The Duchenne smile says it's really the whole being that is happy, made happy by flowers. The whole emotional response becomes a friendly, open, trusting response. So it's not just a superficial response. It's a deep response.
So bring your honey a flower.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you got a guy in your life,
that's it. Bring flowers.
Bring a flower. Bring flowers. You know, and again, we're going to talk about mixed bouquet. They found that the people responded mostly to mixed bouquet of flowers, rather than a single of the same kind. You know, like you like a dozen of one kind.
And also to flowers that have a scent.
Well, the scent is mixed in with the visual. That's why a bouquet is so good, you know?
Right.
You know, nowadays there's a special little thing, which is about roses that are being sold at $6 a dozen.
Right.
Whenever you give someone a rose, the first thing they do is smell it. Well, in receiving flowers, there's a combination of visual, and in visual, you're looking for beauty, you're looking for color, you're looking for symmetry, and you're looking for smell. When any of these are defeated, so if you give somebody a flower and they smell the rose, hoping it smells like a rose and it doesn't smell like a rose, the Duchenne smile disappears. It turns into a Pan Am smile. So if you're hoping that somebody's going to respond to a dozen flowers that have no fragrance, bought at a store because they're cheap roses, well, you know, it's a problem. You got to mix those up with other flowers. Mix them with lilies, you know. Get flowers, get roses and lilies together so that you'll get the smell of lilies, or put something in there that smells fragrant.
there is something really clear about the fact that flowers are in and of themselves a form of language. In the 1600s, 1700s, 1800s in Europe, people would send flowers, bouquets of flowers that conveyed a message as if it had been a letter. Because flowers, and I think you can find literature about this, flowers, each flower, depending on the color, depending on the species, depending on how it's mixed in with the rest of the bouquet, conveys a certain message. But I think it goes deeper than that. If you think about one day when you were at the seaside and you walked by a terrace with flowers and you smelled the fragrance and it made you feel so good inside, there was something about that that I think it really speaks to the brain in an ancient language that does not have words attached, but it has so much meaning of joy that it's difficult to put it into words. And that's what you give when you offer a flower or a bouquet that has that scent. You offer that ancient message of celebrating life.
And having a garden, and having people have a garden to have flowers available to people so that people could see it, you know?
Right.
Wherever you do it, growing a plant in your office. I've often wondered, I go into a doctor's office every now and then, a physician's office, and I see a dying plant.
No, isn't that horrible?
Or I see a bouquet of flowers that have been sitting there for a week. Mm. No one changed the water, no one cut the plants. You know, cut the flowers. A secret to all of you, if you ever put flower stems in water, remove any leaves, because the leaves turn into bacteria and that blocks up the stem from getting water. But there you see rotting flowers in a physician's office. I walk out.
Yes.
I say, absolutely. Oh, if he doesn't see his own flowers.
Anywhere. I mean, a restaurant. If you go to a restaurant and the flowers are not taken care of, get out.
Right, get out quick.
Get out.
Okay, now the third study is really so good. We got to go to it because we're going to run out of time. And I know there's so much to say about this, Roberta. The third study is the most fascinating one. People receiving flower bouquets are happier and less depressed than people who do not receive bouquets. Now, here's the evidence. We gave these flowers to people 55 years and older, and you would give them one bouquet, and using the DES depression score, which is a way of judging depression, which evaluates sadness, shame, guilt, and self-hostility, right? 81% of the people who receive, well, they receive one bouquet, they felt better. They felt better automatically. If they got two bouquets, one following the other within a short period of time, 81% of the people who received both bouquets got better. Their depression lifted. 81%.
Hmm. Well, there is another study done in Wales with people who suffer from senility, dementia. So we're talking about people between 65 and 80. And same thing. The researchers were working with these people and saw that when the folks would take a walk every day in a field of daffodils, their symptoms would decrease so significantly and noticeably that that it would be apparent. And it turns out that there is a phytochemical in the daffodils that is specifically that has a positive effect on dementia related to Alzheimer's disease.
You know, and it's kind of interesting because of the people who received the bouquet, 84% of them increased their memory skills.
Right.
So you're saying that this phytochemicals, you know, may be somehow secreted as a result of getting the flowers. You go visit your mother, bring her flowers.
Yeah.
If you like her. You know what I mean? Otherwise, bring her spiders and bring her spiders, mushrooms, things that are not so nice. So this third study, which was the one about people, talk about, Roberta, talk about the response that the elderly people, not elderly, but 55 and older, they were very significant in the way they received the flowers.
Oh, well, they would not only be happy and show the Duchenne smile, but they would even hug and kiss the messenger, the one who brought the flowers. They would invite the person in for dinner. They would
invite
give them
back?
A big tin. Yeah, come back anytime. It seems to have elicited, maybe in a group of people who are significantly lonelier, maybe, who have less social exchange than other people, it elicits an even more intense emotional response. And not only that, it lasts up to a week. It lasts a long time.
It lasts a very long time.
Not just the happy response, but the improvement in the
functioning.
Memory. Yeah,
memory and so on and so forth. So this says...
so we just wanted to point out that flowers are doing something. All of this was to bring you to realize that flowers are interacting with humans in an interesting way. Flowers not only brought on beauty onto Earth when they emerged out of evolution, but they also now are interacting with humans so that humans are propagating the plants and doing something that is... that's favorable to the flowers.
You know, you have to ask yourself, why is it that people have favorable responses? You could say it's learned association. Flowers are associated with nice things and gifts. Evolutionary food associations, you know, throughout history, wherever there are flowers, there tends to be other things such as their roots and vegetables that flowers grow in good parts of nature. And there's an attraction to flowers because you might find tubers, and it means you're not going to starve there. A good place to pitch your house if you're going to raise a family is where there are floral fields. Those are all those things. But now what Roberta is saying is that flowers have a super stimuli response. According to this guy named Pansep, there are primal neural networks in the posterior thalamic, tectal, and periodical regions of the mesencephalon that constantly process emotional information. And the organisms seek this information. So this is what happened. We're attracted to symmetry. We're attracted to color. We're attracted to flowers. Flowers are not stupid. Somewhere a long time ago, flowers said, let's use humans to propagate. We can't depend on the bees. Let's use humans. Let's make ourselves so pretty that the humans will pick us up and they'll do things like split our tubers. You know, if it's a bulb, they'll cut it, they'll propagate us, they'll grow us.
Well, and look at what we do. We genetically engineer them to create all kinds of different colors and shapes and scents and everything. So we're actually really contributing to the evolution of flowers immensely, so much more than what could have happened if flowers had not developed this kind of strategy.
They developed a strategy for survival, and flowers, from how many years ago did you say?
140 million.
140 million years ago, when they finally caught on to the humans. And, you know, and just think about orchids. Orchids have no way of keeping themselves going, really.
Right.
Humans keep orchids going. Right. You know, we keep it, we make it work. So the coordination... The whole idea of flowers and how flowers affect us, there are perfumes that have a flower smell, which have a floral top note. They have been shown to reduce depression. Think how smart the flower is. The flower says, good, I'll be good for depression. I'll be good for positive moods. Well, I'll be responsible for making people happy.
There are actually flower essences that it's a whole line of different homeopathic remedies produced from flowers, and they have the characteristic of the flower, and you can use them for any kind of illness, you know, because the flower, I guess, is able to interact with the human in such a way that it has an effect on human physiological functions, even just the sight of a flower, the experience of a flower in your room changes who you are physiologically. That's what flowers do.
And the flowers have gotten us to take care of them. Now, we could talk about pets and dogs and cats who have gotten us to do the same thing. They've cultivated us. We may think we cultivate them, but let me tell you, that was pretty smart of flowers. I don't think they would have gotten by as well.
No.
They are attractive. They get people to, they get animals to ingest them and therefore to spread their seeds around, but mainly, plants have this incredible effect on our mood, and by affecting our mood, they got us to take care of them. Yes, we are the caretakers of the flowers are the patrons, and they sit by smiling. Mm-hmm. So every time you feel bad about getting a bouquet of flowers, that bouquet would not have existed, except for the fact that the flowers figured out, hey, if we grow, and we give ourselves, we make ourselves begotten and given to some humans, we're going to make the humans feel good, and they're going to keep us going.
Yep. That's pretty smart.
That's pretty smart.
And you know what? I'm happy for that, because I love to have flowers around. They are so beautiful. I mean, it's not something that I feel taken advantage of by the flowers. I'm happy they've come up with that.
Flowers are the plant equivalent of companion animals.
Right. Right.
You know, I mean, you got one and you get that going.
So flowers and humans could not, they are linked, evolutionary speaking, and they could not exist without one another. And that's really what we're saying here, that we are like flowers and flowers are like us.
And that's why it gives us this positive response, which, my friends, is always worth shooting for. This is Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Atti. We're out of time, as usual. And I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. It's been fun.
Yes, it has.
This has been one of our most fun studies.
Yes.
We had a lot of fun doing it.
We
leave out many pages of information. But
it's lovely to
research. Lovely.
If
you want to write to either one of us, we'll send you the research sources. You know, you just write to Roberta Maria Atti. Where will they find you?
Roberta, I'm sorry, I'll give my website, www.creativehealthsolutions.org.
Creative Health Solutions, plural.
Plural.
Plural.org, and you'll be able to reach Roberta, or you could always go to my website, thepositivemind.com. If you want a copy of today's program to send with a bouquet of flowers, you call 212-757-4488, my friends. Now, here is a little of Billy in the totality.
When you're crying, you bring on the rain. So stop your sighing, be happy again. Keep on smiling, 'cause when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you. Thank you.
Very nicely done, Armand DeMille and Roberta Maria.